Hi, this is Mary Wilson of the Supremes, and you're listening to my friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show, and we just have so much fun, my baby love, me and Mike Miller. Woo!
Hi, this is Joe Terry from Danny and the Juniors, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hi, this is Earl Speedo Carroll of the Cadillacs, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Hey, Mr. DJ, play my favorite doo-wop song.
Well, it's the one with the crazy story.
It keeps my baby bopping all night long. It picks her up like a pickup truck,
shaking round a cargo of fun. So play my favorite doo-wop song,
Mr. DJ, play that one.
Well, it's the one with the crazy story.
It keeps my baby bopping all night long.
She's percolating like a high school day, giggling, wiggling fine. So play my favorite doo-wop song. Mr. DJ, be so kind.
Well, down at the pool hall, Rich Shock and Cue Ball, notice Johnny Otis was the focus on his advocate.
Song. Well, it's the one with the crazy story.
It keeps my baby bopping all night long. She'll be so light and shine all night, pretty as a bottle of beer.
So play my favorite doo-wop song with the DJ on the air.
Hi, this is Mike Miller, and you're here with me on the Harmony Street Show, and it's my pleasure to have as my guest a friend of mine, a very super talented guy, a writer, producer, a theater guy, and a guy who is known all over the East Coast, all over the United States, Mr. Philly Cuz, Mr. Doo-Wop. How you doing?
Thank you so much. I love that one. That was a good one.
Yeah, hey, well, I get carried away sometimes, but, you know, let me tell you something, Phil, just between you and I and everybody that's listening, your name comes back to me from so many people when we talk about talented people doing talented things. And, of course, our good friend, Abe, he's been Philly cousing me to death, you know, for the last couple of years. So I figured it was time that you and I get together and we go on the air and we just talk about music.
Yeah, Abe was Abe from Doo-Wop Taxi.
Right.
Was closer to me, but now he's closer to you. He went to Florida.
Yeah, he's a Florida guy. As a matter of fact, I met Abe in the flesh for the first time. We went out to dinner and Susan, and we took a couple of pictures. You know, we went to a seafood restaurant. We had a ball, and he's just Don't mind me saying this, AB, because he plays it like a tough New York City cab guy. But but he's really just, he's like an M&M. He's tough on the outside, and he's got a milk chocolate center. And, you know, he's a teddy bear. He's a little cherub.
He's a great guy. You know, and he's one of those people that, you know, just today it's amazing, the cyberspace. He just, you know, he actually took to my CD, my albums, and my music, and basically he went running with the football, you know, and he got me involved with his shows and did a lot of promoting for me, and I really appreciate the guy. He's a wonderful person.
Absolutely, and, you know, he just loves the music. I mean, that's what it's all about. And he, just like myself, and probably just like you, even though I've been on stage with so many of the big guns, I'm still in awe of certain people when I stand next to them and with them. I had the opportunity to do a long interview with Johnny Mathis, and when he was at the Kravis Center, he invited Paulette and I backstage, hugged us, kissed us, and I'm telling you, be still my heart, Johnny Mathis.
Oh, yeah.
You know.
Johnny Mathis, he is, his early stuff, and I say early stuff, not meaning in terms of the quality of his voice, but just, I study productions, you know, you're an arranger too,
right.
And I'm just, it's just amazing the early arrangements that were used, songs they're not even famous Johnny Mathis songs, like a great song called When I Am With You.
Oh, yes.
When I am with you, any dream I may dream comes true. Any star in the sky I can buy with a sigh when I am with you. Whenever we meet, whatever the sweet occasion, where angels won't go, I go with no persuasion. When I am with you, I am nothing I was before. I am everything I ever wished I could be, and more. Just for what you are yourself, that I love you as I do, but for what I am when I am with you. Just for what you are yourself, that I love you as I do, but for what I am when I am with you.
Hey, Mike, John Mathis.
Hey, John, how are you?
I'm okay, thanks. It's Johnny Mathis, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
And I listened to that, you know, and of course in those days they didn't have the synthesizers and all that, and I used girls doing like this kind of ethereal kind of
right.
angel kind of voice in the background. It's amazing. I love studying those arrangements. Yeah, they have Fitzroy. No, they didn't need it at all.
I went to see Olivia Newton-John a few years ago at the Kravis, and I couldn't believe that, you know, with all this time in the business, she was really getting on top of her notes, and I really couldn't believe it. She had about six people behind her singing and a full band, and then I scratched my head and I said, wow, I didn't realize how many hits she had. It was kind of like the Gary Lewis and the Playboy syndrome. You don't realize Gary had 10 or 12 hits. But she was right on, and I saw her after the show, and I said, boy, you're right on. And she pointed to the guy. She says, you see this guy over here? I said, what? She says, he's my sound man. We don't go anywhere without pitch correction. I said, hey, you know, that's a sign of the times.
You know, it's interesting because I can never use that, you know, but I'm not putting it down or anything.
Right.
Because it's a generational thing. It's you remember the days when the drum machines were first introduced, you know,
oh, yeah.
And friends are like, oh, that's so cheesy, that.
Right.
Oh, this. And then Hall & Oates comes out with this, I can't go for that, and they
right.
use the cheesiest drum machine.
Right. No, I hear
you. With a hit record, you know, and you don't know. I mean, it the ear, every generation has an ear. Or it's not that they have an ear, but they're introduced to certain things. And, you know, the pitch control is one of them. It's, you know, I hear it when it's done in excess. You know, I don't go for it, but I do hear it. I even hear it in a country western song.
Yeah.
But it's something I don't really need.
Well, if you have, you can figure out when it comes in. It kind of thins the voice out, and it makes it a little bit more mechanical sounding, and it compresses it a little bit. But, you know, all that being said, Philly Cuz, Battaglia, right?
Yeah, that's right.
An Italian guy.
Italian guy from South Philly, and what I did was I said, you know, my real name is Phil Battaglia,
right.
And what I did was, years ago, I said, well, let me, give me a showbiz name, and, you know, calling everybody Cuz in South Philly is like, you know, it's the usual thing, like, especially during snowstorms, like, hey, Cuz, you can't park there. I dug myself out. Don't park there.
Yeah, well, it's funny. You know, Wayne Miller from the Platters, I met, you know, 30 years ago, and he calls me Cuz because we're both Miller. And it's funny because when we walk around together, when, you know, at times when we've been together, he walks around and says, hey, this is my cousin, you know, from another mother. So, you know, it's pretty funny. But then again, being named Phil and coming from Philly, I mean, you know, that works as well, and you know how much talent came from Philly. I mean, they had their own sound.
Yeah, it was. It's always opportunity. It's like whatever, wherever there's opportunity, and you know, people just getting gear to cater to the opportunity. And of course, ours was American Bandstand,
right?
Buffett Bandstand at the time, and this became sort of like it became Music Central in a way because of Bandstand. And I'm very interested in the history of the city and its sound. And
oh,
we're
yeah.
talking about that the other day, you and I, about, you know, the domino effect, what caused what.
Oh yeah.
In a wonderful what's that Christmas show? It's a Wonderful Life. You know,
right.
If you took this domino out, this wouldn't have happened. And so is that's what you have here in Philadelphia. You have of course, the pop idols, like, you know, the Frankie Avalons and
right.
the Rydells. And then you had sort of the R&B, and of course you had the dance craze, the Chubby Checker stuff happening. But we always and then of course you have like the what we call the Geeter world, you know, and that's
yeah.
Jerry Blavitt and,
sure.
and that kind of music. And he's a neighborhood icon, you know.
This is the Geeter. They call me the big boss of the big hot sauce, and you're on the go with one of the hottest radio shows in town. My man, Mike Miller with the Harmony Street Sounds. This is the man with the plan to make sure that you know everything about the music that's a part of our band.
Being from New York, I mean, we all walked around saying TSOP. We realized it as being a very serious entity, the Sounds of Philadelphia, you know.
Yeah, and there's... I mean, I revert back to it. I love, like, for instance, the Intruders.
Oh, I loved all those groups. All those groups were fabulous groups. Well, you see, that's where the doo-wop went. It went, those, they took those harmonies and kind of during, in, around, and through, and after the disco craze, you know, which is another whole subject. The whole R&B thing with the Manhattans and the Intruders and those types of groups, obviously had their roots in doo-wop. And, of course, the Intruders did a version of Gloria. The Intruders did a whole bunch of doo-wop in their day.
Oh, yeah. And it was just a progression. And it's something that we'll talk a little later about this, about my musical. And the idea is that, like, they have kids today, especially with all the Harmony TV shows that are out there with the kids singing. I think we have an obligation to show them where these roots came from, these Harmony groups.
I say that all the time. I really am annoyed. And, you know, of course, you're talking about Philly. I talk to John Madara once a week, too. And he talks to Jimmy Iovine once a week. And we always talk about American Idol. And I say, you know, they need to do a hardcore 50s doo-wop night and tell these kids and show these kids where a lot of this stuff came from. Because if not, you and I know, if not for that, there is no this.
Oh, yeah. And there's I was doing a festival. I have my list of festivals. There's a principal in one of the South Jersey schools.
Right.
And he has, like, a talent show every... And what he does, this is ingenious. He goes to YouTube and he finds, let's say, the Shirelles, and they're singing live somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And he gives it to his students and says, here, learn this song.
Oh, great.
And they gotta come out with their costumes on, you know, the teased hair, whatever it is.
Cool.
And they do the moves.
Cool.
And it's just so easy. Like, here you go. Just, instead of going through the rehearsals, just say, here's YouTube, learn this.
That's fabulous.
Well, this particular principal loves doo-wop.
Hey, it beats the heck out of years ago they used to make us do square dancing, you know? I mean, you know, it's probably much more interesting to give the kids some, like, straight-out doo-wop. So let me ask you something, Philly. When you were a kid, who did you listen to on the radio? What kind of tunes did your ear find as a young kid?
You know, I'm coming from I'm a kid in Philadelphia. I come from an Italian-American family. So, of course, we're going to have my parents listening to Sinatra and Tony Bennett and,
right,
you know, that gang. And not to mention, but my uncle Jimmy Sonny Saunders took Frank Sinatra's place in the Harry James Band.
Right.
And he was the lead singer for Charlie Spivak.
Wow.
And you still hear him singing on, like, Sirius XM the 40s.
Wow.
And there's only 7 songs that Frank Sinatra wrote. I mean, if you ever looked at, one time I was in Sam Goody's and they had this thing where you could go into the, today it's all online, but if you ever looked at how many songs Sinatra actually recorded, encyclopedia.
He didn't write that many. You're right. He did
He only wrote 7 or 8. I believe it was 7.
Right.
And he co-wrote a song with my Uncle Jimmy.
Ah.
And it was recorded with, it's a duet with Sinatra and Rosemary Clooney singing. It's called Peachtree Street.
Say, Frank, you want to take a walk?
Well, sure, sweetie. Just pick a street.
Piccadilly Circus.
Oh, I'd rather not.
Champs-Élysées?
Mais non.
Times Square?
Nah. 'Cause there's nothing can compare with strolling along Peachtree Street with my baby on my arm. I've got the sweetest peach in Georgia, and she just came off the farm.
Strolling along Peachtree Street, I'm happy as can be. I've got to thank the state of Georgia for my baby's family tree.
Everybody in Atlanta knows what a treasure I've found. I'm gonna set my gem upon the main stem.
We spread a lot of little peaches all around.
I feel like a new millionaire when I'm walking with my charm. Strolling along Peachtree Street with baby on my arm.
You like Peachtree Peachtree Street, Frank.
Oh, I love the place, but where are the peach trees?
We'll have to go back a few years for
that. Well, then let's turn around.
Can't you see me in a hoop skirt strolling along Peachtree Street with a colonel on my arm?
And I can tell that you're from Georgia because you got that Georgia charm.
Strolling along Peachtree Street, I'm happy as can be.
Miss Rosemary.
Yes, Frank.
How come the sweetest peach in Georgia hails from Maysville, Kentucky?
Let's not get it around.
I can be reached. We'll be married in Atlanta. One happy man and his spouse.
And just as sure as you're born, we'll plant us some corn and
spread a lot of little kernels round the house. I feel like a new millionaire when I'm walking with my charm. Strolling along Peachtree Street with baby on my arm. Say, sugar.
What's the matter, honey child?
Well, I'm getting kind of tired. Would you rather carry me or call a cab?
Taxi!
Thank you, sweetie.
My grandfather was a baker in South Philly, and my mom's the youngest child, and so she's like a teeny bopper.
Good
coming
for her.
Down from her bedroom on the third floor to the second floor kitchen.
Right.
And there's Harry James with my uncle.
Wow.
There is Joe Venuti, the famous violin player.
Wow.
There's all these people, and my uncle would take them home. So I come from this, I was always in love with, of course, the American songbook, and knew all these composers, Harry Warren, George Gershwin, all them. Then I have this other aspect that's, I go to the corner on 9th and Wharton where Pat Steak and Gino's is.
Right.
In those days there was no Gino's, it was Jim's and Joe's and Pat's. And on the corner of 9th and Wharton, I'm singing with the big guys. They let me sing lead.
Very
so the
cool.
Big guys are like, you know, about 16. I'm about 11 or some 12. And I'm singing. I come in loving, enjoying, and singing the Drifters.
Cool.
So I'm singing songs like, There Goes My Baby. And so that's my corner. I come in that direction.
Gotcha.
Later on, in the 70s, I was telling you today, I end up playing piano for the Times. I was their road musician.
Yeah, and we will talk about that, too, because I have a feeling that my group, when I was with Grand Boulevard, that we actually did a show with you guys on Long Island at one of the clubs, which I can't remember. It could have been Copperfields. Does that ring a bell with you?
I just know that we did Long Island.
And as a matter of fact, the group did Trustmaker, and not only that, as we were talking about certain tunes, we did I'll Always Love My Mama in our repertoire that night, and I remember the guys from the Times like coming over and go, cool, man.
Hey, this is Caesar from the Times, and you're listening to my good friend Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
Because we did it with...
The last time I was with... I was on stage with them at the... At the Cool Bobby B doo-wop convention in Las Vegas in 2006.
Very cool.
2006. And it was great getting back together with them. And it's so funny because, like, you know, George died, the lead singer.
Right, I know.
And the replacement guy, I actually played piano for his aunt who was in the Platters. So it was all this connection here.
Now,
and it was fun getting together with him.
Who is his
aunt? A great
aunt?
Guy. The love. They're a classic, you know, that's so much in love.
Right.
Yeah, that was something like everybody, every corner in South Philly, somebody was singing that song.
Except that those harmonies are not so straight ahead. I mean, you know, the bridge is tough, and there's one, like, you know, the first tenor's got to drop down on the so in love part, and if you're not hearing it, groups could spend 6 months learning that tune. It's not an easy song. It sounds easy, but, you know, the finger snaps are easy. The rest of it is very hard.
Finger snaps are easy, and the seagulls, the color.
Right, and the seagulls, you know, if it depends on where you are. If you're on the Jersey Shore, you just look at it, you know, early in the morning, man, on the boardwalk, you got it.
You got that. You got that. Well, the Jersey Shore, I mean, you know, that's another thing, too. All my, I'd say, my next door neighbor, actually, I'm not kidding you, I'm not exaggerating, my next door neighbor is actually Bob Rydell. On Montgomery Avenue in Wildwood.
Yes, I heard that. As a matter of fact, it's funny because, you know, Larry Chance, before he was Chance and when he was Larry Figueredo, he actually danced on the original American Bandstand before Dick Clark. And the funny thing about it is that Ernest Evans sat right in front of him because it was Ernest Evans, who, of course, is Chubby Checker, and then it was Figueredo. So when, in elementary school, Larry sat right behind Ernest Evans. He said, and they used to walk home from school, and Frankie Avalon and Bobby Rydell were both in the band, and they both played the trumpet, and they used to walk home together with their little trumpet cases. That's a story from Larry Chance.
Larry Chance is that not, I found out recently that he graduated South Philly High.
Right.
You know, everybody thinks that, you know, they come from
the Bronx.
Yeah, the majority of the group comes from the Bronx, I believe.
Right, but Larry migrated to the Bronx.
That's right, right. Yeah. And so he is yet another graduate of South Philly High. Now, in the old days, there's like, you know, there's four high schools in South Philly. There's Bobby Rydell's high school, which is what I went to, and Jerry Blavitt's high school, that's Bishop Newman. And then there's South Philly High, which Mario Lanza, everybody else went to. Well, you know, Frankie Avalon, James Darren, and Larry Chance there, too. And I was really, you know, I was telling people on Facebook, I said, well, you know, we didn't know that. I was surprised how many people didn't know that.
Hi, this is Larry Chance of the Earls. And you're listening to, one of my dearest friends on earth, Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. One of my dearest friends, Mike Miller. Yeah.
Well, you know, it's funny, too, when you talk about Philly stories. You know, I'm friendly with Jerry. He told me a story one time. He says, you know, I used to dance on the original American Bandstand, he said, and I was one of the guys that led the revolution against Dick Clark. He said that was against him because there were a lot of people picketing against him that didn't want him to take over the show. And he called me over to the side because Dick was a very smart guy. And he says, look, I want five or six of you on my side. How can I entice you and what can I do for you? And Jerry said to him, I want to be the head of the dance production and I want to be the guy that selects the dancers, picks the dancers, yada, 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 yada. And Dick Clark wanted to get some of the guys from the opposite side over to his side. So he invited Jerry in, and Jerry became a big producer of American Bandstand. And that's how he started when he was a kid.
Oh, that's a great story. I didn't know that.
Yeah, I didn't know it either until I spoke to him. And he said, you know, but it started out by me folding my arms and saying, who is this guy? We don't want him. They were picketing.
Yeah, it's changed.
Funny
changed.
Stuff, you know. Yeah. So you were doing, as a young guy, now let me ask you this. Were you in a street corner group?
Yeah, it's sort of like an ad lib group. And I get involved in high school. I'm like a freshman. I get involved in a pretty famous local group called the Eminons.
Uh-huh.
No name backwards, Eminons.
Uh-huh.
And we were actually featured a few times on Ed Hurst's Aquarama, which was the winter version of Steel Pier.
Uh-huh.
The Aquarama was a sort of an aquarium that is like, I think it's the CVS now in South Philly, which is directly across the street from where the Phillies play baseball, down at the end, you know, going toward the Navy Yard.
Right.
And in South Philly. And we would do cover stuff. I remember we performed on TV, of course, the Rascals, you know, Good Lovin' was a big hit at the time. And so I'm going from the corner, and then we're going into a band where the band boys, you know, and we go through just like everybody else. And I tell people, I said, you know, my whole life, just like all you and all the other people, our lives are like one 45 hit record after another, learning the songs. You
know? You went through the process and you paid your dues and you cut your teeth, and it's always been part of you, and you took very few breaks.
And in the meantime, you know, you're developing this like encyclopedia of arrangements in your head,
right?
And lyrics and whatnot. and, you know, productions, and then you find yourself, you know, at this age. Well, actually what happened was in my 50s, early 50s.
Right.
All this stuff came out with the computers and the sequencers. And,
right.
And a friend of mine who was a teacher at a college, he lives across the street from me, and he, you know, he was turning me on to this. And I says, "Wow, my God, you know, I have to pay $300 an hour in a studio."
Right, and every 15-year-old kid that has Pro Tools now has got a product.
Yeah, it's so it's sort of like a double-edged sword. On one hand, it's good because you have it's so easy to have a studio if you know what you're doing. You know,
right.
You could really
right.
use it wisely. On the other hand, when we were growing up, all the radio stations were independent, and they weren't, like, you know, owned by about five corporations.
Right.
So you had, actually, you had, in a lot of respects, you really had genuine popular demand. And we know that's not the case today.
Right, really, right. And not only that, it's like, you know, I have a tune that I wrote for the 7-inch vinyl book, you know, and it's called Bouncing a Kiss Off the Moon. And, you know, of course, I gave it to TuneCore, which is great, and they only play little snippets of it on iTunes and Amazon and all of the places where they put it. And then I found one particular site that was playing the whole tune, and I said, wait a minute, what's going on here? That's not what I was bargaining for. Somebody takes it, they throw it on YouTube, and then you're dead in the water, you know?
Yeah, so. But also, yeah, you could have, this is something that people don't realize. I could have 500,000 fans.
Right.
And buying my independent album. And that's no assurance that you're going to get into mainstream terrestrial radio, you know?
That's right.
These days, because it's just not the way it is. I mean, what people don't realize is that the music they're hearing when they go up and down 95 from Florida to New York and go back and forth, those 15, 20 songs, that's sort of like, radio is sort of like McDonald's. You go to McDonald's,
hey.
And you can't say, "Well, give me some lobster or give me some chicken parmesan." No, they have this is it. This
right.
is what they're giving.
Well,
you.
You know, it's we used to call it MOR radio. You know, middle of the road radio, and you knew that at 6 o'clock you were going to hear a you know, Lou Christie tune, and you knew that. I mean, you know, it was like a no brainer stuff. I was trying to explain to my wife Paulette, who is quite an aficionado in her own right, how I'm starting to time Sirius with certain tunes and whatever. That's why Love and Kisses to Cool Bobby B, who...
Oh, definitely. And you, and all you guys.
Yeah, but Bobby...
That's what people don't realize, that you guys are from the old school. You pick your own playlist.
Right.
You launch people. God bless you.
I do what I want, and I say what I want on my show, and it's really good. And, of course, you know, I've been known... Really and truly, what's come back to me is that I'm known for doing real colonoscopy-type interviews. You know, I can't tell you how many of the big, big stars have said to me, "Wow, I never got asked that before." I mean, even Johnny Mathis, his middle name is Royce, and I told him it means, you know, he who is king, you know, Roy or Royce. And I think that was his father's name, too. And he says, "Oh, my goodness, you know, I didn't know that." He says, "Tell me more about me."
Well, Johnny Mathis, you know, I guess we look for in pop music, it's not just the voice. I think this is what people miss when they're singing on stage and Broadway. It's not in pop music, it's not really about the voice, the technique. It's the character of the voice.
Right.
And so Johnny Mathis, of course, you know Johnny Mathis. You know, he's got a character about him.
Right.
Jimmy Durante had a character about him, obviously. So in pop music, it's the character. But the thing that's amazing in terms of technique with Johnny Mathis is if you ever get a chance, put on a Johnny Mathis record when it's playing, try to hold the notes and without breathing.
Oh, yeah.
His amazing breath control.
Well, you see, for years and years... My vocal exercises were I used to put on Johnny's greatest hits and I used to sing along with them. And on the way to a gig, you know, even if it was like a cassette recording, whatever. And that's the way I used to warm up. And I was like really open when I got there. Either that or I had crashed and burned because every one of his tunes is wide open.
Oh, yeah. And he holds his breath breath, and he holds these notes, and you try to do it, you know, it's like doing the stair climber, you know, when you go to the gym. You,
well,
and then I'm on the 25th floor. How many more? I got 60 more steps. Oh, okay. And but it's amazing the control he had, and it struck me the other day. I was saying let me sing along with him, and it was just it's.
Oh yeah, but as most people don't realize that he was an Olympian athlete. He was he was on the backup Olympic team. He went that far in his athletics, and then he had to make a choice as to whether to be an athlete in or stay with his singing career. And I asked him if he was a javelin catcher, and he laughed.
Also Michael Landon was a javelin thrower, I believe.
I know. That's really interesting. So anyway, you're doing a lot of South Shore and South Jersey clubs, which, you know, I was always going to the Shore, you know, and, you know, with different groups or just hearing great groups. There were so many good groups, you know, from the Jersey clubs. And I understand that your mom was a piano teacher.
Yeah, mom was a piano teacher of the neighborhood. Again, you know, I was telling you earlier about my uncle and the musical family kind of thing. And so I'm always, she's my first piano teacher.
Right.
And so I'm sort of like, I got like this kind of like, in those days in the neighborhood, and you know, here I am playing Debussy on the piano. I'm playing some standards. And,
right.
And I want to go outside and play, and play ball. Well, because my mom was a piano teacher, and you know, then I went to Settlement Music School, and then I was like sort of the piano player of my high school, and then I went to Temple University, studied composition. I was there with John Oates and Tom Sellers, and a lot of like people that themselves did Rock the Boat, produced that. He arranged Rhinestone Cowboy.
Wow,
he's from the Madeira stable.
Yeah,
and so I just it's something that. What I was telling you earlier, when I was in my fifties came and I was into, I said, look, you know, I always wanted to be, I've always played the piano at country clubs. I was always a musician. I said, but, you know, let me make an album. And what I did was, the first album I made was On the Way to Cape May with Philly Cuz and the Shoebies.
On the way to Cape May, Stone Harbor's skies were blue, we were naming the day.
The way the locals describe the tourists. It's sort of like calling, it's like the cowboys used to call the Easterners the dudes.
Right.
You know? So the Shoebies are the term that they think is a derogatory term about, you know, the people that vacation there. But
right.
You know, in the wintertime, North Wildwood, there's four Wildwoods. There's North Wildwood, Wildwood the Crest, and West Wildwood. And just Wildwood alone in the wintertime's population is 5,000. In the summer, it becomes 75,000.
Right.
So just that one area of the South Jersey Shore. So you can imagine how many Shoebies there are. You know, I know this market, and there's a song called On the Way to Cape May,
right,
which is our Delaware Valley's New York, New York.
Gotcha.
And it's an anthem. It's a grassroots thing. It was made famous by Cozy Morley, and then later became nationally famous with Al Albert's show. He had a syndicated show.
Right.
And I said, you know, let me do the next generation. And I said, well, how should I arrange this? And first person that came to my mind, I said, let me arrange this like as if Bobby Darin were doing it, you know, the swing thing. And so I did that. The album, the year we distributed it down the shore, we even had it in hardware stores. So in the year 2000, it becomes, it gets the front page cover story of the Philadelphia Inquirer Sunday's paper on Labor Day weekend.
Which fabulous.
Is like, you couldn't ask for anything. In 2001, you couldn't ask for anything.
How cool is that?
Greater publicity.
Well.
So, and to this day, that's my top-selling album. It's a beach album. It's my first one. And, you know, I look back at it now, you know, and what I'm doing, actually, is sort of like something Frank Sinatra did. You know, Frank Sinatra has about five or six takes of I Got You Under My Skin with the same arrangement.
Right.
And what I'm doing is I'm taking the same arrangement. I have a better studio sound today, And I'm opening up my new album. The album's called On the Way to Cape May Again.
Right.
And then I offer 10 Philly Cuz new selections that no one ever heard me do. And then I have some like of the essentials, some of the favorites.
Not Billy and the Essentials. These are Philly Cuz essentials.
I'm singing with Billy and the Essentials. I'm singing with Billy 3 weeks from now.
Oh, very cool. Well, you know, that's why I said there's so many Philly people that are just, let me tell you, I'm a New York kid, but we certainly appreciated Philly.
Oh, yeah, and guess what? New York, forget it. Forget about it. We have there's so much talent coming out of those days and today, too. But, I mean, when we talk about talent, we're talking about the grassroots, the neighborhood people.
Right.
You know? And, of course, you got the Dion. You go on and on and on.
Yeah, Dion lives down the block from me. I see him every now and then. And he's getting a little more reclusive now. You know, it's like, you know, people stop him and they say, Dion, and, you know, used to be he'll stand there and talk to you for an hour and a half. Now people go up and they say, Dion, and he goes, no. No.
Well, he's turned into a grumpy old man, is that what you're telling me?
I don't know. Well, you know, he does spend a lot of time. He's in church a lot. He does a lot of work with people. He does a lot of work with substance abuse, and he's a really a busy guy. And, you know, of course, Dion slowly but surely has become an icon with a capital I.
Sure.
And he probably is, you know, when I think and I look across the horizon, his eye is just a little bit taller than a lot of the other big eyes out there. And actually it's even growing. He's held in reverence.
Yeah.
Especially,
in fact, you know, you were talking earlier about like when you're on stage and these people, you know, when I started being on stage with these groups, these vintage groups, two things I noticed is that one is that I'm the youngest one on stage.
Yeah, I hear you.
At the time. And two, I was just fascinated by like, wow, look at this right over here. I got the students right over here, you know, and,
right.
But I got to tell you that I think I would be in awe of meeting Dion. There's certain people that you would just say, wow, man, there's Dion.
There is an awful lot of Hamada Hamada around him. I mean, I've been with him many, many times. You know, he texts me or calls. He called me and asked me if it was true that Freddie Ferrara passed away. And he said, Mike, is it true? I don't want to put it on Facebook and then be embarrassed. And I said, yes, it's true. He says, I figured you'd know. And then I said to him, you know, come on, D, you know, you got to come on my show and do an interview. That was a year and a half ago. He called me from New York when they were doing the those protests against Wall Street. That was a year and a half ago. And he says, yo, Mike, it's Dion. I'm in the Holland Tunnel. I'm just coming back from Newark Airport. He says, as soon as I get home, we'll do that interview on Tuesday, man. Call me Tuesday morning. So I called him Tuesday morning. He says, you know what? I'm interviewed out. He says, and I got all this stuff to do. He says, don't worry. I'll get back to you. We'll do it. That was a year and a half ago. But you know what? He'll call me one of these days out of the blue, and I'm not going to bug him because he's Dion.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You know.
Something else, and I'll tell you what, you know, just yesterday, my wife happens to be a kindergarten teacher in Philadelphia, and it's for the, you know, the African-American Month, Black History Month.
Oh, okay.
What I did was I took his Abraham, Martin, and John.
Cool.
And I sort of, like, arranged the words for the kindergarten kids, but here you are. Here you go. We're offering Dion, you know, to the kids that are learning a Dion.
Oh, that's fabulous. You know, I'll tell you something you didn't know about me. I was a dean in a very tough Bronx junior high school for 30 years.
No kidding.
Yep. And very tough at the end. So the last, let's say, 6 or 8 years, you know, were tough. But I paid my dues, and I have kids that are now 40 that write me on Facebook, and they say, yo, Mr. Miller, man, you know, I remember what you told me. And I would say, what did I tell you? And they would say to me, you told me whatever, blah, blah, blah. You changed my life. And, you know, I realized you can't save all the kids. You do what you can, but there is a bucket full of kids that you do touch, and that makes it all worthwhile.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's amazing. It's amazing.
That's great.
Stuff.
I didn't know that about you. That's
oh, yeah, yeah. That's what I did when I, and my day used to start at, you know, I'd get out at 3, and my day used to start on the way home, and I'd get home, and I'd relax, and I'd take a shower, and I'd go out and sing 5 nights a week, and get home at 2-3 in the morning, and then start the day all over again until I crashed a little bit, you know. And then I had a disco group, believe it or not. We got some stuff on the, on YouTube, the group called Devotion, and it was from a bunch of Bronx, real Bronx street guys, lovely people, but street. And, you know, we went into Media Sound in New York and we recorded some heavy duty stuff, you know. I'll send you some. And,
oh, yeah.
And, you
oh,
know.
Oh, yeah, always send me it.
I'm talking
about. I love your Harmony Street thing and cool. The stuff you were sending me. It was great.
Hey, cool. You know, it's like just being, there is nothing in this world that is more satisfying than being creative. And being creative with other people, that's spiritual. You know, it's a spiritual experience.
You know, it's wonderful. It's just something that I got to tell you. I was telling you about my uncle, who was a songwriter and singer, and
right.
I remember him. I can still remember him knocking on my door. He's about 75 years old, and he's with Joe Valino, who's another pretty famous singer from South Philly.
Right.
And they're knocking on my door. Joe Valino just suffered his second stroke, and he would get out of that muscular thing by singing and playing the piano. And then after, you know, you see him in a year's time, and you think you would never know that this guy who's so agile playing a wonderful piano had a stroke, you know?
Right.
But they're knocking on my door on South 10th Street. They want to borrow my 4-track tape recorder because they have a song that's going to make the young girls cry. This is the one. This is going to be their big hit.
Wow.
And I'm looking at them walking down the street, my uncle in his jeans, blue jeans, you know, and I'm thinking, like, it's like Peter Pan.
Hey, man, listen, Paul Vance is my neighbor. He wrote, "My Name is Michael, I Got a Nickel." He wrote "Catch a Falling Star" for Perry Como. He wrote "Itsy Bitsy Teeny Weeny." He wrote "What Will My Mary Say?" And 15 other songs for Johnny Mathis. He's, you know, if anybody hears this, you know, Paul is 80-ish. He looks like he's about 48, and he wears tight jeans and you know, open V-neck shirts and all of that stuff. But he's a mega songwriter, you know, wrote so many hits and whatever, and he is still in there producing, and he's in production all day long because he says if he stops creating, that'll be the end of him.
Oh, yeah. And you know, the wonderful thing is that even though I was rapping, I was bad rapping the terrestrial radio, but you do have, it's a new world out there.
Right.
It's a new world out there, you know, and I'm looking at the doo-wop stations that are around. It's, you know, it's a formidable kind of like entity here, you know. There is, for instance, MTV is dead. You know, there's no more music on there. Okay?
Right.
What's taking that over is PBS. And what you're seeing on PBS is doo-wop. You know, you're seeing that. And you're seeing, there are people like you making it possible for songwriters, you know, my age, your age, you know, and
right.
This fellow you're talking about, and it's just a wonderful, with the technology, I embrace it all. It's wonderful.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, and, you know, I've spoken about this to so many people, and I'll give you a perfect example. CBS went down. I am very friendly with Don K. Reed. I talk to him all the time. And, you know, I've had been on the doo-wop shop like umpteen times, written umpteen jingles. But I will tell you that I would say to him, come on, Don, you know, why don't you do internet? I will not go on Sirius. I'm not selling out. I will not go on the internet. Well, Warren from the Belmonts talked him out of it. And he is now recreating the doo-wop shop on Belmont's internet radio. And, you know, that's a wonderful thing. And people can hear Don K. Reed now on Sunday nights on Belmont's internet radio, just like he used to do the doo-wop shop before. The only thing is he can't play those, you know, 500,000 jingles that he had because the call letters are different.
Yeah, it's wonderful. So all these people live around you. Is that, that's the, you're in Florida down there, and you got like, is this
well,
sort of like the Beverly Hills of doo-wop down
this
there?
This is where they all go. Terry Johnson's my neighbor. Jimmy Gallagher lives not far from me. Vito Balsamo is down here, back and forth. The list probably, Dion's down here. Connie Francis is down here, and I'm not even, I'm just thinking off my head. I mean, there are many, many more who are all just down here. Gene Chandler has a beachfront house in Lauderdale. The list goes on and on.
Connie Francis is down there, huh?
Yeah, she's, you see her once in a while. She's, she still gets 25 grand to go out of the house, but, you know, I'm not sure what you get. for the 25 grand. But she's, well, she's become a little fragile at this point, and I'm sure she's not singing out as much as she used to, but she's Connie Francis.
Oh, yeah. You know, we do the San Gennaro Feast. It's the one of the largest festivals in Las Vegas. It's been going on for like 33 years now.
Right.
And we, it's, like easily on a Saturday night, it's 25,000 people, and it's basically a carnival kind of atmosphere, Little Italy,
yeah,
Little Italy, Las Vegas.
Well, it reminds me of the Mulberry Street San Gennaro.
Right, that was,
and it's,
exactly that. They took this.
Right.
The Rhode Island people that transplanted into Las Vegas 33 years ago.
Right.
And they built this up, and so we have it like on the Rio Casino's grounds. We have it at the Silverton. We're going to be now on the Strip this time in May. And the entertainment there is, of course, everybody wants to be involved. You'll, in the audience, you'll see the Tommy DeVito from the Four Seasons. You see
right.
Elton John. And then, you know, everybody wants to be on stage performing there, the Rat Pack.
Right.
The thing is, it makes sense. You know, you have, we have a tribute to Connie Francis. One of the gals does a tribute to Connie Francis.
Right.
And with, I do the doo-wop stuff. In fact, I was telling, today I was telling Tony Sacco, who organizes it, I said, guess who's telling me they might show up? They're threatening they may show up, and that's Madeira and White.
Oh, that'd be great. I talk to John all the time. John will talk to you about the music business for an hour, and then he'll talk to you for another hour and a half about health food and health products now. He's really into it.
He actually does that.
I know.
But he, and I tell Tony, I say, you know how many songs we do by that either they produced or wrote? And, you know,
oh, yeah.
Tony does At the Hop, Rock Around the Clock.
Right.
I do Billy and the Essentials, Maybe You'll Be There.
Right.
And the history is amazing. So I said, well, that'd be great if they go there and we would introduce them to the audience.
But you don't do You Don't Own Me.
No, I don't do that. That's my wife's favorite song, you know.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, John, for writing that song, you know, because she's always telling me off with that one.
Yeah, well, you know, it goes on and on. 1, 2, 3, Len Barry.
That's right.
You know, he's
and,
got...
Come On Baby, Let the Good Times Roll that he produced for Bunny Sigler. We were talking about this, you know, like he takes under his wing a 17-year-old piano player who he was really in awe of. And he introduces him to the studio, and they do work together, and he introduces him, takes him out to L.A. to work with Quincy Jones, who was working with Leslie Gore, who was producing Leslie Gore.
Right.
And that young 17-year-old kid was Leon Huff.
That's right. He was responsible for that.
John and White, Dave White, they are the people that put these guys all together.
Well, it's funny, you know, while we're talking about John Madara, you know, my wife was Miss Maryland and then went to the Miss USA contest and then was the runner-up in the Miss World contest, and she was on tour with Joey Heatherton and Bob Hope. And John said to me, guess who her first steady boyfriend was? It was me. It was, and he sent me pictures of he and Joey Heatherton when she was 17, 18, 19, 20. And then she kind of moved on to other things. She was a real good singer. People don't realize that.
Well, we were too busy looking at her.
Yes. Well, you know, but she had that sassy, you know, I went to CW Post with her brother Dick Heatherton. We were in orientation together in September 1964. And, you know, he told me all about his sister. Some of it wasn't great, but, you know, she really she went around and down and had her experiences, and now I understand she's pretty much reclusive. She doesn't do much, you know.
Yeah, I mean,
such is life. But John is still vibrant and goes on and does really good things. Let's get back to the fact that you've been pumping out CDs through your whole career. And you've just done so many things, and you've written some plays, some musicals.
Not a musical. I'm working. What I did was I put together a musical, and what I available to me is the studio. So what it turned out, I call it a new term, an audio book musical, which is a fancy way of saying a radio play, and I wanted to write a pirates kind of thing, and I had the title the Pirates of Doo-Wop Lagoon. And then as I was writing it, I realized, wow, you know, I like to add the Jersey Devil to this because no one's really touched upon the Jersey Devil.
Right.
And so basically, it's called the Pirates of Doo-Wop Lagoon: A Tale of the Jersey Devil. And it's interesting because next Sunday I'll be at a book festival or an art festival in Hamilton, New Jersey. It's called Lines on the Pines.
Right.
And that is the heart of Jersey Devil territory. And they know about me writing this. They actually came to me, this arts council and the people in that area. And I'd love to, you know, I'm looking for I have a director. I'm looking for a theater group to get this together. It's like I've never done this before, so I'm rubbing elbows with theater people.
Hey.
And, you know, what it has doo-wop in it. I use some songs that were done before, like the 4J's Here I Am, Broken Heart, and Nails in there.
Here am I, here am I, my, here am I, here am I, my, here am I, here am I, my, ball, 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 ball.
Here am I, here am I.
they think Atlantis girls are crazy, this and that, but they're actually in Wildwood, New Jersey today. And the backdrop is the story about the Jersey Devil, who I treat like he's the creature from the Black Lagoon or the Thing, you know,
gotcha.
James Arnaz.
Gotcha.
So there are actual really scary moments. It would be a great Halloween play also.
Cool.
And in that, it's the silliness of the pirates, the time, you know, the cultural shock. You know, they don't even know they're in another time.
Right.
But we do. The audience does. And what happens is, to make long story short, the seven pilots, four of the younger ones, become, I need a background singers for my concerts.
Right.
And me and Billy Carlucci teach them how to sing doo-wop.
Very cool.
And they become really good, and they become my singing group. And then all hell breaks loose when they start chasing the Jersey Devil for his gold.
And as they say in the biz, you know, you'll tweak it as you go.
Yeah, exactly.
And then we used to say, we'll fix it when we mix it.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing, because it's there, the play's there, the music's there, and once I start getting the theater company, the actors and everything, guess what? Then the vibes really kick in, you know, and then the energy gets in there, and you tweak it. That's what you do.
Let's talk about One Summer Night, and it's not the one by the Dan Lears.
Meant to be for one summer.
Absolutely. Well, Winter Wonderland didn't suck.
Yeah.
I'm teasing. You know, well, at least going out to Vegas, at least you got to meet Stevie Dunham.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, Steve. Yeah, he's.
Can I tell you something? Stevie Dunham and I produced the first Harmony Street cassette. I was probably about in my 40s, and Steve, I think, was about 9. He was about 9 years old. He had Crescent Records.
How about that?
Yeah, he was about 9. I'm telling you, he couldn't have been older than 9.
He comes over to the San Gennaro feast, and I'm trying to get him on stage with us. I got to talk to Tony Sacca because we want to do that song, beep, 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 give me one more time, you know, the Camelot song, and I want to do an acapella of that with him. Great guy, love him.
Oh, Stevie's got great pipes.
Yeah, and he sang with us in 2007 in Las Vegas. Yeah.
I'll tell you, Paulette and I would come out. We always stay at the Encore, you know. We would come out. We're going to be in Paris for 2 weeks, though, when that's going on. So, you know, that's not going to work.
Paris is, you know, that's a good excuse.
Yeah, I know. You know, it's Paris trumps Vegas. Well, you know, there are lots of good things to be said about Vegas, and, you know, we will get there. I always, when I go to Vegas, I got a lot of choices, you know. Anthony's there, Clarence is there, Mary Wilson's a good friend of mine. You know, and how about all the people that gravitated to Vegas and stayed there? Amazing.
Yeah, it's I love going out there. Of course, you know, I'm working out there, and it's fun to go. I'll be there May 8th, that week over there I'm singing for 6 days there at the San Gennaro Feast. And then I'm off a week, and then we take the San Gennaro. It's got to be like a road show. Last year we took it to Phoenix. And this year we're going to be in San Diego.
Well,
on the 25th that weekend.
Cool.
And the thing that's really smart about it is that on the East Coast, everybody knows the Irish festival, the Italian festival,
right,
the Greek festivals. You go out, you take it out there. It's like we took it to Phoenix, and it was like such a novel idea. People loved it, and I got to tell you, you know, in the audience, if you got a Saturday night with 25,000 people walking around, you know, maybe in that audience it's about maybe 5% are Italian.
Yeah, but
everybody else is like, you know, the Cowboys and
everybody likes to shove down Zupa the Passion. Everybody likes to shove down cannolis, and you know it's universal. Come on.
And the Philly cheesesteak, that's the biggest sandwich. The Philly cheesesteak
cool.
These festivals.
Well, you know, when they redid the Philadelphia airport, and that's got to be going back, 10, 12 years now already.
Yeah.
I said, oh, my God, everywhere you look is food. It's like ridiculous. Everybody's eating a pretzel.
That's what it is like at the San Gennaro Feast, and that's what it's all about. You're just like, you know, when the Eagles play in South Philly, and I wrote the Geno Steak jingle.
Here's the Philly cheesesteak. Your choice, Whiz, American, or Provolone. With onions or without. When you start putting mushrooms, peppers, you killed it. That's not the authentic Philly cheesesteak. Everything's simple. I'm going to go like this, point. There's your liquid cheese. And that's going through your arteries. So, and these guys are getting triple whiz. Then they go down, whiz on the fries. And then I love when they say, give me a diet soda. I go, go all the way. You know what I mean? You're going to buy a Cadillac, get the motor too. Well, like I said, I started in 1966. I opened it up with $6 to my name. The same sandwich you're paying $7 for was 45 cents at that time. You work hard, you will get the opportunity to be successful. And even that, there are times that not everybody's going to be successful. But the opportunity, working hard gives you the opportunity. The opportunities come.
So over here you got Geno's and Pat's. It's like down around the corner from me.
Right.
And you catch a football game. Now, we're in the northern part of, we're below South Street, you know, where all the hippies meet.
Right.
And so we're in the middle of South Philly, and at the ends is where all the stadiums are, south, which is close to the Navy Yard.
Right.
But at that spot before the Eagles game, that is swarming with people to get the Philly cheesesteak.
Right. No, that's interesting. You know, when I used to wear my hair a little more curly and I had the mustache, people used to stop me all the time. And I got stopped in Boca not long ago. And the guy comes over to me and says, hey, Mike, how you doing, man? Come on, Mike. It's you, isn't it? You know, I don't say anything. I say, come on, Mike. And people used to stop me and say, Mike Schmidt all the time. I'll send you, you know, cause you remember when he had the curls, you know, but I'll send you pictures of me when I had the curls with a baseball hat on. You go, whoa. All the time I used to get that stuff. It was the curly hair and the mustache, you know. But
yeah, we got this new album. the my favorite doo-wop. And what I did there was, for the purpose of going out and traveling, I said, let me compile all my previous doo-wop from my albums. And not only doo-wop, but like I have my own arrangement to It's a Beautiful Morning.
Bonnie Nadler.
Yeah, right. Right.
Yeah, I know who she is, of course.
And I didn't know her. I mean, she was a friend of mine, but I really didn't know her on Facebook that well. And
right.
What happens is one day I'm searching YouTube, Philly Cuz, who's putting stuff down there, and there's this program. It's like a baby. It's like sort of like a baby boomer bandstand, and a lot of people are from bandstand or
right.
You know, from that era of dancing. And they're dancing to It's a Beautiful Morning by Philly Cuz.
Uh-huh.
And it's a live TV show, and they're dancing to my song. And, that was really special. I said, well, who are these people?
Cool.
And I introduced myself, this and that. And they made Bonnie ends up making a group, Facebook group for me. And it's like central, it's like a fan base over here.
Very cool.
But the thing is that she's... They love the song. It's my version of A Beautiful Morning. So that's on the album, which is on sale at CD Baby. And getting a lot of earplay on that album. It's amazing. And once it starts off with One Summer Night, and it's got a lot of, like, favorites, like Then They Wonder Why is, like, sort of like a big favorite.
Walking with your girlfriend, you had a roving eye. Your baby picked the habit up and found another guy. Whoa.
Chapter 2 consider.
Chapter 2.
Baby, check out Chapter 2.
Then they wonder why.
Then they wonder why.
Then they wonder why.
Then they wonder why. They just can't see how they shift their destinies, so they cry. Then they wonder why.
Chapter 1, you find love. You keep it very dear. By Chapter 3, you're puzzled why that love has disappeared. So you wonder how it happened. You haven't got a clue.
Because you never do consider
Chapter 2.
Then they wonder why. Then they wonder why.
Then they wonder why.
Then they wonder why. They just can't see how they shift their destiny, so they cry. Then they wonder why. Shift their destiny, so they cry and they wonder why. No, they can't see that they make their destiny. Then they wonder why. They just can't see how they shift their destiny, so they cry and they wonder why. They wonder why.
And also, right. Song called My Favorite Doo-Wop Song.
Song. Well, it's the one with the crazy story.
It keeps my baby bopping all night long.
It picks her up like a pickup truck, shaking round a cargo of fun. So play my favorite two-wop song, Mr. DJ, play that one.
Well, I remember Brenda said to my friend the driver, my turquoise Chevy Impala back when.
1960 Chevy Impala.
Song. Well, it's the one with the crazy story.
It keeps my baby bopping all night long.
She's percolating like a high school date. Giggling, wiggling fine. So play my favorite doo-wop song. Mr. DJ, be so kind.
Well, down at the pool hall, Rich shot the cue ball. Notice Johnny Otis was focused on his advocate.
Song. Well, it's the one with the crazy story.
It keeps my baby bopping all night long. She'll be so light and shiny tonight, pretty as a bottle of beer.
So play my favorite two-wop song with the DJ on the air.
Uh-huh. And sure enough, AB gets some DJs using it as a theme song.
Very cool.
And so did Cool Bobby B was using it for every time you request a song at a site, you would hear my favorite doo-wop song.
That's cool. Well, you know, now you're running neck and neck with Mr. DJ Play Those Oldies. Also a John Madera tune.
John Madera, right. Anthony Sophomores, right?
Yeah, very cool. Well, first of all, nobody had Anthony's range. I used to say, Anthony, he used to stand on a ladder when he sang that song. Jesus. Guy's got some chops, you know. But, so let me ask you this. What's your favorite Philly Cuz tune?
It's hard to say. It really is. I mean, you won't believe this, but if I'm in my car and I'm riding down, there's songs that I wrote, and then there's songs I do that other people wrote. I'm also a composer, so probably I'll listen to my overture to my play.
Okay.
Which is sort of like a symphonic kind of thing going on.
Right.
And I like Beautiful Morning. It's a lot of fun. I like One Summer Night. I can't say I don't like any of them, you know.
I thought I was the only one that drove around listening to me, but I listen to me now. I really feel refreshed that you listen to you.
Well, you know, you should listen to yourself.
Oh yeah.
And,
hey.
And I do. You do because whenever I finish an album and I listen, it's sort of like I tell everybody, it's like I got a sunburn on my ear, and you know how sensitive you are when you've got a sunburn.
Right.
And the thing is that you don't know, does this sound good? Does this good? You know, what's happening?
I always mix it and listen make a CD and listen in the car. If it doesn't sound good in the car, and then you hear things in the car, you say, oh man, the lead vocal's too loud, man. What was I thinking? Yeah. You know, and then you gotta like pull it back into the mix, you know, it's like, so, you know, you hear a lot of things in the car that you don't hear anywhere else.
People don't know what we go through when we're writing songs and producing them.
Are you kidding, man?
We go into our man caves, 40 mixes
until, and then you wake up the next morning. You ever do this? You wake up the next morning and you go, what was I thinking? It sounds like crap, man. And just before you went to bed at 2:30 in the morning, you said, oh man, this is beautiful, right? And then you wake up in the morning, you listen, you go, ugh.
That's what I call the Bermuda Triangle of composition, because like you think you're on the right track, and then you go back, and then it's like, oh, no, I'm not on the right track. But we were talking earlier about the craft. They were saying that, like, I was telling you that I wanted to do a saloon song for my newest Beach album. And when I said saloon, I'm thinking about, like, something like, one of those Bobby Vinton songs, you know. There, I said it again. You know, that era, particular era. And I came up with doing... I Wish I Didn't Love You So. It's an old song. And but the thing is that I was singing harmony too, and I came to the sweet, the magical spot. It came up and says, wow, that's what it all should sound like. That's the character. And once you get the character, you know, the flavor of what you want to present,
right,
and then you just spread it left and right. And
yeah.
And as long as I have that in the arrangement, I have a grasp on it, then everything's fine. But when you don't have a grasp, that's the problem.
Sometimes it just flows, and sometimes it's just you put it away and you come back to it. And you know, but I find that I have good days when it just flows out and I can just like get an awful lot done. Like today, like I was telling you that I had this tune that moved along pretty quickly, and I sent it to a big studio guy to master, Bruce Barriel, and he said, came back to me and he said, you know what? It's a great song, and it's been this way for a long time. He says, but you ever thought about doing this song as a ballad? And I said, no. He says, well, go home and think about that. And I called him back. I said, you're a genius, because it's totally different tune, and the lyrics smack of, a weepy ballad. So, you know, hey, that's where we're going with it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you were mentioning some flamenco songers.
Oh, yeah, he said, I Only Have Eyes for You, which, by the way, you know, Terry Johnson from the Flamingos, one thing that a lot of people didn't know is that all of the guitar lead-ins to all of the Flamingos hits, including I Only Have Eyes for You, was Terry on the guitar. You know those three little chords at the beginning of I Only Have Eyes for You? That was Terry on guitar.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, very neat. I mean, you know, he not only arranged all of their hits, but he sang on all of their hits. And to me, you know, he was over and above. You know, it's like you were talking about before. I started playing guitar when I was a kid. I have a big Yamaha keyboard here that I can kind of bang on, but I'm not really a keyboard player. My chops, you know, are on the guitar, but it's, if you don't have that and you're pulling notes out of your tushy, it's much harder than having that point of reference.
That particular arrangement to the Harry Warren song, I Only Have Eyes for You, is
right.
It's really something. It's very, what is it? It's like, it's very mystical.
It's ethereal. and he said they painstakingly worked on how much reverb to put on the background voices. They fooled around with that. And he said, you know, what was the other thing that he told me? I asked him, when I interviewed him, I says, Terry, sometimes if my ears are not tricking me, I hear da-bop, da-bop. And other times in the song, I hear shabop, shabop. And then I hear shabop, da-bop. And then I hear da-bop, shabop. All different versions of shabop, shabop, which most people think it is straight through. And he said, you know what? You're one of the few people that have ever said that. He said, and that was planned that way. The harmony changes throughout the tune, where it goes shabop shabop, then it goes shabop da bop, then it goes da bop da bop, then it goes da bop shabop. And he says you really have to get inside of the tune to hear it. And I said,
and guess what? That particular production is so wonderful. It's like it's like emotion. I always say this, you know, I say that, you know, what we're talking about now is we're talking about like an audio film, you know, for
right.
The ear. And in fact, that seems to be, explaining to my sons that because we're in digital music, that you no longer have, like, let's say if you have a camera and you're filming, let's say, a building that is 50 yards away from you.
Right.
Okay, so you have that dimension, that spatial dimension.
Right.
And then if you go closer to it and you're like 10 yards, it's going to be different. It's going to look different. Now, think of that in terms of microphones, you
right.
know. You don't have, what you have basically today, you have to learn tricks to create that dimension.
Right.
But everything basically is two-dimensional in what we're hearing today.
You're right.
When you hear like something like Groovin' on a Sunday Afternoon, or when you hear like a Tommy James arrangement or something,
right.
you know, you're actually outside. It's like they put you outside, you know, and
oh, yeah.
the flavor of it.
Well,
and of course, the Beach Boys were excellent for this kind of stuff, too.
You know, the warmth of what goes on. You know, digital is really cold and hard, you know, believe it or not, coming back. It's crisp and hard, you know, and to get the warmth is tough sometimes. I mean, look, I don't have the greatest. I do this up in my loft. I have it carpeted. I have a couple of hard surfaces. I have a really good microphone, and I have Pro Tools. And, you know, it's a lot of times I'll listen back and I say, yeah, you know, the vocal, it's clear. I can hear every word, but it's not as vacuous, an area to sing in as in a real recording studio. Don't forget that in the old days, and I'm sure you did recording like this too, everything went at once. We had a group years ago, we recorded for Relic Records. We did the Best of Acapella. We had a group called the Islanders, and we had a couple of things on Relic. And, you know, as did the Camelots and some of the other groups, you know, we recorded, and then we signed with MGM Records, and we did some sessions where we had like a 21-piece orchestra, and everything went at once. And if the drummer dropped a stick, he said, oh, shit, and we started again. We were in another room doing vocals. The band was outside, but it was one take, and there was no overdubbing, and, you know, that's the way it was.
That's the way it was, yeah. It's, you know, like I say, when you have your own studio, and you make your own records, you know, you write your own rules. It's something that we all want to do. We all want to stretch and advance, you know, our productions. you know, and you come up with surprises. I mean, like on this new album I'm making right now, I said just the other day, I'm listening to this song. I said, I gotta do this. I gotta do this song. I'm gonna do a cover of this song. And simply because when I looked at my list of my songs, it says that would actually, that pacing of the song would just like over here in slot number three.
Right, I hear you.
And it's a song by the, not a real big song, but the flavor's great. It's a song by the Sapphires.
Uh-huh.
And it's called, Where Did You Go To When I Met You Last Night? Who do you love? I want to know.
Oh, yes, I know it well.
Who do you love? I want to know. It's a Philly. It's a Philly R&B.
Yeah, I remember the tune very well.
Yeah, and I think Leon Huffman had something to do with it, but I'm not sure. And I said, boy, you know, this is so simple to do. I got to change a couple of words and around, make it more male-oriented.
Right.
But just the flavor of the song is something that, you know, it's worth retrieving and bringing it out. And it's just, you know, and it was on the, it's like you say, sometimes it just flows. There
yeah.
it is.
No, you know, that's good stuff. And, of course, you know, with me, I recorded in so many different modes. When I had Harmony Street, you know, I had Cozy Jacoby, and he used to, he was my musical guy, and he would do all the musical tracks for everything that we did and whatever. With me, you know, I do guitar MIDI, which is very interesting. You know, there are not very many guys that are astute at doing that.
I heard it. Sounds great.
Yeah, you know, a lot of my stuff is guitar MIDI, and, you know, it's funny. But, you know, I use the bare essentials. You know, even with Pro Tools, you know, I don't even punch in. I just pull up another track. It's like I'm too lazy. You know?
It's amazing how many tracks we have today.
Oh, yeah.
Compared to, like, they only had eight.
And then, okay. You know, and then you sing the backgrounds, and then you have a section, and, you know, you can taper them all, you know, you can taper, you know, the end of the sentence, you know, so that all the vocals end together, and you can do that little cleanup stuff that, believe it or not, it's funny, I'm friendly with, I've recorded at Media Sound with the biggest guns in the world, and I've recorded with little guys and everything, but, Bruce Barrielle, actually, he mastered Jimmy Clanton's new CD, and I don't know if you've heard that, but man, Jimmy wrote every tune in that CD. I have a newfound respect for Jimmy Clanton. If you get a chance, listen to some of the tunes that he wrote, and listen to some of that stuff that he did.
Yeah,
man, unbelievable. But his recording engineers, you know, in New Orleans, man, these guys are great. These are guys that do the Neville Brothers, and you know, they're all crackerjack people. He did some great stuff. I'll send you a couple of cuts. You're gonna go, holy shit! I'm telling you.
Love to hear them.
I mean, really, it's like Jimmy Clanton, just a dream. Let me tell you, man, some of his stuff is like super. So WIBG-FM.
Well, WIBG, that was our rock station, rock and roll station back in the '60s and. And I had High Lit. I don't know if you heard those.
Oh, do I? Yeah, sure. I know High Lit.
Sure. And there's and so this what happened was that WIBG, a fellow down in Ocean City, New Jersey, bought the rights to this station, the letters, and he was using WIBG as a Christian station. And then what happened was that in Wildwood they had this WILW-FM. And that's Rick Rock was on there, and Cool Bobby B's on
right.
there, and Rudy Sheptock's on there, and Philly Bill Culp. And what happened is, and then a lot of the guys, you know, like Dave Kapolsky, is that his name?
Uh-huh.
He's on there, and this is like WILW. And then what happens is the fellow that owns WIBG buys that station.
Uh-huh.
And then they got into the, why don't we, you know, just, you know, because once again, the Shoebies market, you know, the people come from Philadelphia, you know, they'll love WIBG. So they put this together to be like a nostalgia kind of station, and they're playing their oldies. They play Philly Cuz. Philly Cuz just wrote the theme song for Rudy's show. And then Cool Bobby B's on there every, you know, the usual time, the Sunday, the 4 hours on the Sunday night. And it's like the Cape May County, South Jersey station down there. And it's working out pretty well for them.
Very, very cool. Very interestingly, tell me about the 500 Club fire and how you lost your piano and what that was all about.
Well, you know, I look back at it now, and I was just like, that was a neat story to tell. And it's sort of like a full circle because I'm there with the Sacca Twins. Now, the Sacca Twins review is they sort of like, they were a splinter group from what was called Bandstand. There's a DJ called Bobby Beato.
Right.
He has this group called Bandstand. But they were put together as a show band down the shore, and they're playing at the surf club. And at the time, the trumpet player, a friend of mine, Nicky Fantasi, says, and I'm in Temple University, and he says, Phil, this summer we need a piano player, and would you like to, we're going to be at the 500 Club, da-da-da-da. And I says, and then in the meantime, my buddy John in Temple University is saying, Phil, why don't you get an electric piano? You and I, we could play the, you know, the coffee shops around Center City, and, you know, we could do a duo thing. And I says, all right, well, let me, so I'm sizing things up. And, of course, you know, to be 18, 19, playing at the South Jersey Shore in those days, it's like, forget about it.
Right.
You know? Like, you're on top of the world.
I hear you.
So it was a choice between playing these sort of like coffee shops where you're not making money and going down playing the clubs. And so I had to say no to John, who was John Oates.
Right.
And I go with the Sacca Twins. So we go into the 500 Club, and it's Memorial Weekend, and we actually put money down on a house, a rental house in Brigantine. And we perform there for the Memorial Day weekend. 500 Club, and then we have like this 2 week break, and we're going to go down there. And in the meantime, me and my girlfriend, who's my wife now, we go up with my friends. We go to the mountains. We're coming back from the mountains, and we hear the 500 Club is burning down.
Oh no!
With Philly Cuz's piano in it.
Oh no!
So the club burns down with our equipment there, and I tell people I was the last piano player to play the 500 Club.
Yeah.
And to this day, I'm still friends with Tony Sacca, who has a star on the Las Vegas Walk of Fame, and he's the fella that does the San Gennaro. In fact, Tony Sacca is going to have his own, I believe it's a sort of like a Merv Griffin TV show kind of thing, Entertainment Tonight.
Cool.
At the Hilton.
Cool.
And here, I'm still with these guys. You know, we're still rubbing elbows together and having a good time. But there you go. There's my. They burned the place down with my piano, and it don't let anybody fool you.
Yeah, but you know what? By the grace of God, you know, there were plenty of groups that disappeared with their piano in fires and clubs. So, you know, hey, you're here to talk about it, so, you know, that's a good thing. You know, I do a show with Ken Brady, who's the lead singer of the Casinos. He's an original Casino. And we're doing a track show together. We do it in Florida. And so if you ever need another two guys that sing really good doo-wop, you know, and you got a spot to fill, call me up. And we'll come and sing in your face as well.
Guess what? I had something cooking in Key Largo.
Uh-huh.
And that was about, it was like two years ago. And they wanted me to put a doo-wop thing together over there.
Uh-huh.
And I'm saying, who's doing doo-wop? I went on the internet looking around for everybody that was available in the South, you know, South Florida area. Like,
right.
Well, actually, the thing didn't pan, it fizzled.
But well,
nevertheless, there's a lot of interest down there, and, you know, of course, I'd love to sing with you. There is
too much doo-wop down here. That's part of the problem. It's on every corner. The problem is, I mean, guys like me who have been lead singer, you know, in groups for years and have, you know, rung the bell a bunch of times, you know, there were guys working for, you know, like peanuts and working for 5 hours in country clubs that don't do as good a job as a lot of the guys that are really, really very good. So it's kind of saturated down here. And as a matter of fact, even with producers for shows, you only have, even though you have the baby boomers down here, you only have so many venues, and everybody, you know, there are 15 agents trying to put shows on in 8 venues. So, you know, it gets to be, oh, here we go again. And the whole thing is not to be doing the same shows again, you know, because you have some of the same performers filling the place up, you know, over and over and over again. And there has to be a time when you got to say, enough, let's get some new faces in here.
You know, and that's where you and I come in.
There you go. New blood. It's the nouveau doo-wop.
I call it neo doo-wop. That's right. Hey, guess what? You know, it's fun. I'm very happy to get out there and sing. I got a couple things. I'm going to be with Danny and the Juniors and Cool Bobby B. We're doing this thing in Lancaster.
I just spoke to Joe the other night, and as a matter of fact, I did an interview with Judy Craig of the Chiffons and Joe that's running this week. And because they're going to be down in Boca doing a show right down here on the 8th of March, Joe will be down here.
Neato.
Yeah, so you know that's cool.
We're going to be doing this Lancaster thing happening, and I believe it's, let me make sure about this. It's the weekend of April 14th. We're in Lancaster.
Cool.
And it's a sort of like, you know, it's a venue where it's sort of like a big kind of like festival kind of thing going on. It's in the daytime, and I never did it before, but Cool Bobby B's there, and also Joey and the Flips.
Oh, Joey and the Flips.
The bongo stomp, man.
You bet. I mean, that's, hey, listen, that's really going back. And, you know, a lot of guys, hey, there's a lot of good talent still around. So tell me something. What would Philly Cuz Battaglia like to say to his fans?
I'd like to say I love you so much. And I don't want you to think that I say this to all my fans, but actually I do. But I do love you, and I especially appreciate the fact that you appreciate my music. And I know, like, every artist, you know, it's just so wonderful to know that there are people out there, and you know, we spend so much time doing our craft, and it's just, it's amazing that especially in today with the emails and the internet, that I have people that, you know, just they're friends of mine from all over the world, and they became my friends simply because they were attracted to my music, and it's a wonderful thing. And I thank you so much for being fans of Philly Cuz.
Well, that's fabulous. So Philly, it's been just a pleasure talking to you, and I'm sure that we could probably do 4 or 5 interviews because, you know, we kind of come from the same place musically, and we have a lot to talk about creatively. As well, it's been just a gas talking to you tonight, and I've learned a lot more about you than I knew, you know, before we had this talk. And I want everybody to go out and buy Philly Cuz and love him and listen to his music. Fabulously talented guy. Thank you, Philly.
Thank you so much, Mike, and I really appreciate this. I got to tell you, it's a very unique interview I had here tonight.
Cool, man.
And it's like we're talking to like musician talk here, and I hope that people enjoyed it.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, the next time we'll talk about chord structure. Oh, I did. You know what's really funny? I had a 3-hour interview with Tim Hauser. It got intense.
Uh-huh.
Very intense interview. I'm telling you, man.
Fucking diminished chords?
Oh, we were talking about how in some songs, I said, how the hell does Manhattan Transfer sound like 5 people when there's only 4? And he says, you don't know how intense it is and all the floating that we do. And, you know, like you drop down on this note, but then you come down and then you flip up a third, you know, on that note, and sometimes, and I'm hitting under one of the girls in this harmony, and then I flip on top of her in the same song, and it's like, you know, we move a lot, and we give the impression that, you know, that it's much fuller than it is, you know. And then he said to me, hey, you know, Harmony Street was just as good as we were. We're just better produced. And I said, get out of here. I said, come on, man. That's like handing me like a little sack full of diamonds, those words. I said, no, he says, yo, man, I mean it. Yeah, man, you know. He This is really, really.
Hi, everyone. This is Tim Hauser from the Manhattan Transfer. And you are listening to my good friend, Mike Miller, on the Harmony Street Show. Keep listening, man.
Oh, he told me stuff. I'll send that interview to you, man. He told me stuff that was like, whoa.
That's great. You know, and they do trickle. I love their trickle trickle.
Yeah, yeah.
And they
do Lonely Way. They do That's the Way It Goes. They do My Heart's Desire. They do a lot of doo wop. That's his roots.
Yeah, you know, it's we're you know, when people say we're keeping the music alive, you know, I like to add to that. It's not about only about museum music. It's about keeping the music alive, you know. And like I always say, tell people, I says, you know, like that. If country music stopped with Hank Williams, yeah, it didn't stop with Hank Williams, and nor should our urban country music doo-wop stop either. So that's, you know, that's where we come in. You know, we want to continue this kind of tradition.
Great.
Thank you so much.
Oh, no, thank you, Philly. I mean, it was time that we did this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, so. Neat. And I really appreciate it. And, Mike, you know, we're going to see more of each other in the future.
Absolutely. Let's hook it up. Let's do it, man. You have a great night.
You too. Thank you so much.
All right, Phil.
Spring will soon be gone. Summer's coming on. And I'm dreaming of lots of summer love. All I think about after school is out. It's heading down the shore to have the fall once more. Whoa, 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 those wild were days. Those wild, wild, wild were days. Every day is a holiday and every night is Saturday night. Whoa, those wild were days. Those wild, wild, wild were days. And then those party lights. Those wild, wild, wild were nights. Yeah, baby, you'll be mine when it's twisting time. Gonna twist the game. Like remember when sleeping on the beach 7 days a week. Rocking every night till the early bright. Whoa, 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 whoa. Those wild were days. Those wild, wild, wild were days. Every day is a holiday and every night is
when I carried on like tattletale, singing cat feed the cop, love in the eyes. Cupid's arrow did the trick. Kathy fell in love real quick as Vinny sang on.
Sing it, baby, baby,
yeah,
baby.
All the girls did notice there was a cop flipping her hair. For that secret man, then the gossip soon began. That can't be the cop, loves Vinny eyes.
Sing about a girl, sing about a girl.
Sing about the moon and the stars above. Now, hey, it's the music that's for me.
Love to sing that doo-wop, doo-wop, doo-wop harmony.
So we got them all together every day to practice.
Doo-wop, doo-wop, doo-wop music.
Doo-wop music, so much fun.
Ram-a-lam-a-ding-dong, so much fun. Get on the pavement, out on the street.
Get in the rhythm of a corner boy beat.
Sing about a girl, sing about a girl.
Sing about the moon and the stars above. Now, hey, it's the music that's for me.
Love to sing that doo-wop, doo-wop, doo-wop harmony.
Baby, come on to me.
tip top, did it tip top, did it top, did it tip top, did it tip top, did it, baby, come on to me.
That did it, did that, did it,
did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it, did it,
so they cry and they wonder why. No, they can't see this is Rick Morris, and you're listening to Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show. From the Skyliners.
That's all right.
No, I'll say it again.
Yeah, again.
This is Rick Morris from the Skyliners, and you're listening to Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
There you go.
Hi, this is Nick Pochak from the Skyliners, and you're listening to Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
I'll never get it.
I have one from you, but let's do it again.
Oh. Hey, this is Donna Groom from the Skyliners, and you're listening to Mike Miller on the Harmony Street Show.
You got it.
My love, and walk with me out to our seashore trail. Every year we visit it and watch the seabirds sail. And let's recall when trees were small, planted where they stand, and that sweet sun shower day. When I first held your hand,
a cool summer rain
splashed the wild flowers that I picked for you as we played all around. We were kids in this seashore town, the cool summer rain fell upon that through all these years had never changed. It's like you're still the girl I loved in that summer rain.
Summer rain, the cool summer rain.
The garden at the lighthouse will lead us to the beach. We could search for treasure there, the pearly shells in reach. And should a floating chest of gold drift right up to me, it couldn't match that lucky day I met you by the sea.
Met you by the sea, the cool summer rain
flashed the wild flowers that I picked for you as we played all around. We were kids in this seashore town, the cool summer rain fell upon your smile that through all these years had never changed. It's like you're still the girl I loved in that summer rain.
Summer rain, the cool summer
like you're still the girl I loved in that summer rain.
The cool summer rain.
Hiya,
everybody, this is your cousin Brucey, and you're listening to my good friend, my cousin, Mike Miller, right here on the Harmony Street Radio Show.
I met her underwater when my feet were tied.
Down at the bottom of Sunset Lane.
She came out of the blue and I thought I had already died.
Down at the bottom of Sunset Lane.
Then I fell in love when she cut the web from the line. And the mob would have a fit knowing I survived the hit. Because I was saved by this angel. The time I tell you, the federal witness program took me here to hide.
Near Myrtle Beach, where they do the shine.
So my brave sailor girl got me stationed and became my bride.
Near Myrtle Beach, where they do the shine.
But today I saw Richie from the old family. Said he's in the program too, and like me, he was rescued one night by a gal from the U.S. She's my Coast Guard gal. My U.S. Coast Guard gal. Forevermore I shall.
I love my Coast Guard gal.
Who set my heart on fire and made me you.
say I love you so. Never let you go.
I loved you from the start.
Prettiest girl I've ever seen, Josephine. As an angel, a heart full of laughter. Each night you were all I dreamed of. Oh, and that day, you became my bride. It makes me look up to thank the Lord.
Harmony Street Show.
To find we really cared. We looked in.
into each other's eyes down the road that led us to Harmony Street. Yes, there were times when we had it all figured out. Then there were times when we both had our doubts. But through it all, you know, our love was complete. We spent all our time on Harmony Street.
Remember all the love we found.